Hey, Hawkeye fans, Chad Lystico here, back for a subscriber podcast. It's been a while. Good to talk to you again. And the good news for you is that my buddy, Mark Emmert, is going to be a 80% participant in this one. He and I just recorded a 40-some minute podcast, and I'm going to put that in the back end of this intro just to kind of set it up. And then first allow you to hear a little bit from Gary Barta today with the University of Iowa, the athletic director, talking about, the COVID-19 situation and bringing football players back on June 8th and then what that means for the season. So here's what I'm going to do is basically just set that up right there, let you hear maybe 7 to 10 minutes of Gary Barta audio. I'll kind of cut it off when I feel like it's kind of lagging, and then we'll transition. I'll come back on, and then we'll transition to me and Mark to finish. So thanks a lot for listening. Let's see if I can do this. And as always, if you have any questions, just let me know on social media, text group, whatever. So really appreciate it. And here we go with Gary.
Anyway, yeah, every day seems like Groundhog Day. You know, we get up and we look at what's happened today and go through a series of meetings and phone calls, and whatever we're preparing for the day before probably changed since the previous day. I noted, I think most of you saw this, but I noted it's still 100 days until our first kickoff. Put that in context, it's been 77 days since we were in Indianapolis and we shut down the Big Ten basketball tournament. So while it seems we've been in this current state for a lifetime, we still have that much and more until we have to finalize and get ready to kick off. I mostly see that as a positive, because if we can continue to move forward and make progress, the closer we get, I think the more chance we have. One of the most common questions, or the most common topic with lots of questions, are we going to play football? Are we going to play a full season? Are we going to start on time? Are there going to be fans? Are there not going to be fans? And those same questions, as I kind of observe and think about it, you know, when are the states going to open up? When are the restaurants going to open up? When are the bars? When are, you know, and once they do, you know, how many people can you have? And what about the airlines? And I finally had a chance to go and get a haircut from someone other than my daughter. And all those things, if anybody tells you they know the answers to all these questions surrounding football, one, they're probably selling you positivity, and two, they're mostly guessing. And that's okay. It's just the theme is nobody really knows what, you know, when and how and exactly how it's all going to unfold. That being said, there are several things that feel like we're taking steps forward. When I look at the states are opening up, there is more access to testing. I think we're learning more about the treatment, and the treatment of those who do get infected seems to be very much improved. And in the sports world, I think there's a NASCAR race every other day, but it's a good thing that NASCAR is out there, and PGA is getting ready for their first main event, as well as the charity event that was last week. And I haven't watched it yet, but I hear there's baseball in other parts of the world, and soccer, and all those to be said that we are learning more every day, and we have 100 more days. And my guess is we're going to learn a lot between now and then. So with all that uncertainty, I'm still, and my staff are still planning for several different scenarios. And the scenarios we plan for seem to change by the day, by the hour, by the week. But as of today, we are still planning to open Kinnick up and have as many fans join us as want to join us. That's one of our scenarios. And we haven't closed that scenario down yet. We're also having to plan for something less than that. You know, whether it's 75% or 50% or something less than 100%. But we haven't at all let go of 100%. We're realistic. We're not expecting that we're going to have sellouts for every game by any stretch. But as of right now, that's still one of the modes that we're planning for. It's all going to be based on health and safety. You know, our student athletes, our coaches, and our staff that'll be working the game or playing the game, we'll make sure that, you know, they're ready to go from a safety standpoint. And then for our fans, and there's a whole litany of people that get involved before the athletic director. There's the CDC. There's our state, whatever our state laws are dictating. There's the Big Ten has a group that our commissioner put together. It's made up of health experts, doctors. Chris Cradiville from Nebraska is chairing that. And we have a representative from Iowa, Edith Parker, the dean of our College of Public Health. And they're working on a playbook on how to bring student athletes back and how to open our venues, whether it's football or any other venue. And so, here's the way to wrap that all up. We are studying and looking into numerous ways where we can mitigate the risk. When our student athletes come back, when our coaches work, our staff works, and when our fans come back to Kinnick, Carver, and our other venues, we're looking for ways we can mitigate the risk of contracting the virus. We'll communicate the things we're doing, and we'll be transparent about the things we're doing to mitigate. And then it's going to come down to individual choice. Fans are going to have to choose. Do I want to go or do I not? Or if there's some personal reason, maybe it's a health reason, maybe it's just discomfort. Fans will, once they know what we're doing to mitigate, then they'll make a choice to attend or not attend. And they'll also make a choice to protect others around them. There's that great picture I think most of you, if not all of you, have seen from 1918 at the Georgia Tech football game. And they were all wearing masks and fedoras. I doubt we'll come back with the fedoras, but I could see people wearing masks throughout the stadium. Maybe everyone will wear a mask. I don't know yet. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. I'm going to run down some specific things fairly quickly, because some of you have brought them up, or I've certainly heard the questions, or I anticipate them. Voluntary workouts, season ticket holders, Kinnick preparation, finances. I'm going to start with the University of Iowa planning. There's a group every day on campus, and I sit in on many of those meetings, and they're going through from A to Z, identifying mitigation in preparation for bringing students and faculty and staff back on campus in the fall. That's plan A, to reopen the campus, probably in steps, but to reopen the campus and this fall be back having in-person classes as well as some online. And there's groups looking at the academic experience, the dorms, the dining, the bus system, and I won't go through the list because it's about as long as you can possibly get. So that's all going on. And part of that group, it's important for me to introduce you to that group and what they're doing, because when we knew that the NCAA was going to approve voluntary workouts, which you all know will begin on June 1st, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we started working on that. And we sat down and we went through that same group, the CDC, the state rules and laws, and the Big Ten advisory group, the infectious disease group. And then we put together a group, UIHC, working with our doctors, and eventually involving, you know, strength coaches and athletic trainers and our main coaches, sport coaches. And so we then brought that plan. We put together a plan, and we brought it to the CIMT, the Critical Incident Management Team, that's working to reopen campus. And they included us as a pilot project. So there's athletics that has a pilot project and research. And so we're working on that. And so we will bring student athletes back. We'll bring them back in waves. And we'll try to learn through the month of June. We're going to see what we learn as we bring students back and coaches in this scenario. It's going to be phased in. June 8th is when our football student athletes will begin their voluntary workouts. That's a key component here. It's voluntary workouts. So not all student athletes are back. Not all student athletes will come back. But once the gyms started opening up in our state and across the country, and we got clearance from the NCAA, we know that we can control the environment and create, we can control how we create safety within our gyms and our facilities. And so football, June 8th, and then phasing in with that team, and then basketball, men's and women's, on June 15th. And then after that, phasing in some of our other fall sports, wrestling and some other sports. So the month of June is really going to be this phase back into bringing some of our students back and getting them ready and learning a lot in the month of June.
A little bit more from Gary Barta there. Sorry about the audio. And I just kind of wanted to give you a taste of what he talked about. We did get into ticket sales, those types of things a little later. It sounds like about 36,000 season tickets are accounted for at this point. So if there is a 50% capacity, now this isn't him talking, this is me talking. If there is a 50% capacity, let's say max, you know, we're talking about 34,000, 35,000 fans. So almost all season ticket holders under that scenario would be taken care of or have access to the stadium if they want access. And Mark and I do get into a lot of that during this conversation, and a lot of hypothetical stuff too that Gary, frankly, you know, shouldn't and can't get in front of at this time. So with that, I'm going to introduce you once again to my buddy who's located in Iowa City. Bear with us on the audio. We were trying a new format today. I think it turned out okay. But mainly, I just hope you enjoy this. And for now, just say goodbye and let you listen to 41 minutes of Mark Emmert and Chad Leistico conversing about Iowa football, which it's been too long. It's the first time we've done that in quite some time. So have at it. And thanks again for listening.
All right, Chad Leistico here with Mark Emmert. Mark, been a while. We're still on the old video conference system here. Sucks not to be in person, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. The reason we're kind of trying to get another podcast out together is, you know, based off of today's Gary Barta Zoom call, and we both actually were on that. And I want to get to some of those topics here, but first, give our listeners an idea of what you've been working on this week.
Well, we're still, you know, the Register began an effort a few weeks ago to try to tell the stories of as many Iowans as possible that have died from the COVID-19 pandemic, and so I'm still kind of the lead person on that. And every day I read obituaries and try to find people that have died from this disease, unfortunately, and reach out to their loved ones to see if they want to talk about who that person was and what they meant to them, and just kind of chronicle what exactly we're losing when we talk about 485 deaths. It's not just a number. It's actual human beings here that were part of our community. So that's the main thrust of my work these days.
Yeah, well, it's great work, honestly. I mean, you're almost like born for this, to be honest. Your writing is so good and your reporting is so good. So, but I do want you back on the Hawkeye beat at some point, and that's kind of what we're here to talk about today. Is when will Mark Emmert and Chad Leistico be back covering football together? That's the topic of today's Zoom meeting. So, what do you think on that topic before we get into what Gary said?
Well, I mean, obviously, he was very forthright at the beginning that they expect to be playing a game on September 5th at Kinnick Stadium, or is it the opener, 5th or the 6th? I'm sorry.
5th, yeah. 5th, yeah. You're rusty.
Forgetting which day is a Saturday, but my son's birthday is the 6th. That's why I was confused. But same thing I think Jamie Pollard had said earlier this week, the Iowa State Athletic Director. So they are proceeding under that premise. And football players returning, what, in about 10 days? Allowed to return in about 10 days to start working out on campus. So we'll see where that goes from there. I mean, obviously, I thought he was very smart to mention this. It's like no one really has the answer. There's a lot of people out there that claim that they do or are saying things, and I'm just not sure why, because I think it's really clear that it's a fluid situation, and it's not going to be up to Gary Barta whether they play a football game on September 5th here in Iowa City. I mean, there's a lot of other people that will have to weigh in before that actually happens, but at least it looks like they're heading that direction.
Yeah, he's certainly came across to me as confident, and I kind of articulated that in the column that I wrote off the topic. But is that the sense you got too? That you know, one of the things that he talked about was, you know, if someone gets sick, they're not going to stop football or stop sports.
Basically, it's when someone gets sick. I think he's admitting.
Yeah, when someone. Yeah, it wasn't even a win. Yeah, right. So he sounded confident to me regarding how Iowa can handle medical situations that do come up, rather than hiding from them, I guess.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that they have a plan in place, and that obviously they got the people here and the facility that they would need. If it's a, you know, a small, isolated situation, I wonder about anything larger than that. I wonder about things beyond football too. Once the other students come back, you know, that's a different story. But I don't doubt at all that he mentioned it too. The players in the facilities will be protected. Like once they're in there working out, they've got a really good plan in place. The guys will be safe. They'll be tested. They'll be screened before they go in. There's only one entrance in and out. They'll limit the numbers somehow. I don't doubt any of that. The question I think that was asked later, and that really is what we don't know, is when they're outside the facility, what kind of protections are they having? Are they being cautious? Mm. All that stuff that we can't really predict right now. And that's when it gets a little bit, to me, a little bit dicey.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Those are topics, that we'll probably never know the answer to unless there's an outbreak and people talk about it. But I mean, yeah, what folks do in their private lives, they can only control so much. So I think kind of the theme of the day from Gary Barta, both for his athletes and his fans, was about risk limitation. That's what stood out to me. This is one quote that I've got transcribed that I wanted to read. He said, "We're looking for ways to mitigate the risk of contracting the virus." And I believe he was talking about the fans at this point, coming to Kinnick Stadium. "We'll communicate the things we're doing, and we'll be transparent about the things we're doing to mitigate. Then it's going to come down to individual choice. Fans have to decide, do I want to go or not? Once they know what we're doing to mitigate, then they'll make a choice to attend or not to attend. And they'll also make a choice to protect others around them." So what'd you make of that quote?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it is ultimately going to be a decision that fans are going to have to make. And not just at football games, but, you know, everywhere. When we talk about re-entering society, how comfortable are we going to a restaurant or a movie theater or a concert or anything else that we typically would have done in the past? And so I think that's fair. And he kind of indicated too that he expects everybody to be wearing masks. He thinks people will do that. I'm a little, maybe a little more leery of that happening, actually, but we'll see. You know, if and when it happens, if people are really socially distancing, if they're wearing masks, if they're not, you know, congregating and or standing on top of each other, basically, how that would be enforced, I don't know. There's just so many questions here that I'm not sure when we're going to know how people respond. But, it is up to them ultimately. I mean, that's not a lot you can do to police that. You know, if you're Gary Barta in the Iowa Athletic Department, I mean, you can have security guards there, but how are you going to, you know, make sure people are wearing masks? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that is a question kind of that sort of came up today. And I think questions like Mike Lost asked a good one about tailgating. Mm-hmm. Scott Dockerman asked one about how did you seat fans, you know, socially distanced, and those were good questions. But Gary, I think rightfully said that, you know, they just don't have answers to those yet. They need to know what the numbers are going to be. They need to know what the science is going to be. And I think that I did not feel like he was dodging that question at all, those questions at all. I just feel like he's actually been pretty responsible, as you mentioned, that, you know, you're not coming out and saying something that may not be true a month from now, you know. So that was one part I did appreciate.
And it's bottom line, it's not going to be up to him, I don't think, to decide how they
true.
I'm sure he's going to get some good advice that other Big Ten teams will be following the same guidelines, I would think. Other sporting events will have to follow the same guidelines. I mean, at some point, this is all going to be uniform. I mean, I can't imagine Iowa's going to be doing something differently than Ohio State is doing, or that, you know, football's going to be doing something differently than baseball is doing, or whatever. I mean, they're all going to have to figure out a way to to have sporting events with fans in attendance if they choose to do that, and it's going to be the same, I assume, everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, did you read the Michigan athletic director's comments? I mean, basically, that's one in the Big Ten that really, to me, has signaled something different than what Iowa and Ohio State and Purdue, for example, have signaled. I mean, what'd you make of that? I mean, if Michigan's not on board, I mean, how does this thing continue?
That's what I'm really skeptical of. I really don't think there's going to be a situation where some schools opt in and some don't. I mean, I think they'll figure out it's either going to go the way the Michigan president has indicated, which is basically if there's no students on campus or whatever, there can't be sports.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be, you know, every school is going to have the same. I mean, I just don't see a scenario where Michigan doesn't play football this fall, but everybody else does, for example, or Michigan State. Yeah, they're gonna have to figure that out. It's not going to be easy, but
yeah.
It makes no sense otherwise. Why, you know, what's the point if you can't have the whole league playing under the same, you know, under the same rules?
Yeah, and I misspoke. Yeah, the Michigan president there. So I think guidance will come, and obviously they can't even have organized team activities until July 1st. These are all voluntary workouts as football players come back on the 8th of June. And I think they're voluntary, but I think most of these guys want to be back based on, everything I've heard from both athletes and parents that, especially the parents actually, you know, feel pretty strongly that Iowa City and that environment will be safest for their sons. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some truth that I think, like you said, that out of the facility, safety might be a bigger question. But was Barter right in saying there hasn't been a death in Iowa City related to COVID-19 in the last month? Is that accurate?
It wasn't. Actually, it was one today. So there was one today. There was one today. Yeah, reported today. So there's been 8 total in Johnson County.
Okay.
To start it, and obviously the outbreak in Iowa began here, the first few cases. So
it's minimized in Iowa City. That's accurate to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, you know, there's obviously no meatpacking plants in this county. The long term care facilities have not really had outbreaks here so far, fortunately. So now we'll see what happens when they reopen, you know, restaurants and other venues. I think that's what June is going to be a real testing ground for this, not just here, but everywhere. Like once we bring athletes back, you know, if there's an outbreak anywhere, what does that do? You know, does everybody put this thing on pause? You know, that's really what we're kind of waiting to see, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, you live in Iowa City. I'm from Iowa City, but I live, you know, a little bit west of Des Moines here, but what are you seeing as you move around town in Iowa City with how people are, you know, behaving and interacting with others?
Yeah, to me, I was telling that before we started this broadcast, but to me, whenever I go to a grocery store or a, you know, gas station or whatever, people are wearing masks, people are being responsible, people are being socially distant, keeping their space, very polite. I haven't seen any like altercations or anything, or people, you know, impatient. I think people are understanding that there's, you know, we're kind of all in this together and everybody's doing their part. So that's what I've witnessed. I haven't heard anything. Like, we haven't had any, you know, episodes here where people are being arrested or anything, or, you know, there really hasn't been any issues here. So to me, that's good. I mean, it's a sign that people are taking this seriously and, you know, are willing to do their part and are patient. And now we'll see once things start to open, how that changes. Obviously, there's been very few, you know, college students around. I mean, the traffic here is very light, as it typically is in the summertime, but it's been that way for months. It really feels like a different town, Chad, when the students are not here, as you probably know. So
yeah. It's
a much smaller community now than it would be, you know, in the fall when students come back, if they come back. That becomes like a, you know, much different environment. But right now, it's to me, it's been very, very well managed, and people have been very well behaved. I've been happy to see that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting to hear that. Thank you for that perspective. I mean, where I live, you know, the Des Moines metro area is so large, and it almost, my experience thus far has been, it almost depends on what suburb you're in or what part of Des Moines you're in. Now, I haven't ventured, east of Des Moines once during this whole deal, but, you know, since the Big Ten tournament, but Yeah, I think it varies by suburb, you know, how many masks you're seeing, what level of social distancing you're seeing. But I think in large part, most Iowans are conscientious and responsible. That's the main vibe I've gotten for the most part. I'm definitely going to be interested to see what it's like at Knoxville Raceway when I go cover that race next Saturday. That'll be that might be a little test case for us to see how crowds can be managed. I'm really interested to see how that works.
What are they doing with crowd? Is it limited or something? Or?
Yeah, they're maxing it out at 50% capacity. Now the track director there said, you know, their usual crowd is about 2250 on a typical weekly race. And that's what this is. This isn't like, you know, big name drivers coming from all over the country. It's more of, you know, a Knoxville local race, mm-hmm. That attracts, you know, more of a local crowd, but they have seating for, 6,000 on the front grandstands and 4,500 on the back. So she was pretty hopeful that they could, spread out people pretty well and that they would temperature check anyone, including media like me, anyone who's coming in a suite, any driver, any staff, those kinds of things. Okay. And, so anyway, that'll be kind of interesting, but you know, as it translates to a 70,000 seat football stadium, and I just wonder how that's going to translate. I mean, how do you get 70,000 people to enter a stadium, even if it's 35,000 or whatever?
Yeah.
Social distance. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I just, first of all, I think I said this on our last program too. I don't see any way that there's a capacity crowd at a football game this fall. I mean, I think everybody will have to find some limit there, you know, whatever it is, 50% to 20% or less. And then that's a great question. Like, do they have to stagger the entrances for these people? And how do you, like, make people stay apart, you know, in the seats and in the concourses, in the restrooms? If they have concessions open, what do those lines look like? I think that's why I think that the racetrack situation will be very interesting to watch, to see how that's managed there, because that'll be kind of telling about it's possible to do it elsewhere. I also think Iowa's going to have a really unique opportunity this summer with high school sports.
Yeah.
I know they've got some limits there in terms of they're asking, you know, parents to bring their own chairs or whatnot, and we'll see, you know, how many people actually, you know, oblige and do that. And if they do not, to me, the thing is, if they do not, what happens then? You know, you're not going to arrest people, I don't think. Are you going to kick them out? I mean, how are you going to manage the, if there is somebody that does not want to follow the rules you've suggested? And that's what we'll find out, I think, is what happens, you know, what happens if people are not obliging. Unless something doesn't happen, it doesn't come to that. I mean, it'd be nice if everybody just, like, follows the rules and but we all know that sometimes in sports things can get a little heated and, you know, I mean, are they serving alcohol at the race, Chad, you know, or?
Yes, they will.
As far as I know, mixture of. You know, what could possibly happen. So, but I think that's just kind of monitoring crowd behavior is really going to be helpful to see, you know, for anybody that's like trying to figure out what their protocol is going to be, just watch anything. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the same size venue or the same sport. Just see how crowds are behaving. And then if you can learn something from that, that's going to be really, really instructive in my opinion.
Yeah. And one thing Barta correctly points out, and, you know, we are not ones to necessarily praise him all the time, but I thought he was pretty good today. He mentioned, you know, it's still 100 days till kickoff. And it's only been 77 since you and I were walking into the Bankers Life Fieldhouse or whatever. You know, to cover the Big Ten tournament. So there is, he does believe time is on their hands, you know, to make risk management decisions. I guess I tend to agree on that.
Yeah.
And a key first step, as we've talked to Kirk Ferentz and Chris Doyle in the past couple months, is a key step to bringing football back, I should say, is to have the student athletes properly prepared. Yeah. So that has been a focus of their first step. you know, I think it's so that makes sense to me, and I don't see them as being at a serious risk in the controlled environment that they're discussing. What will be interesting to me is, you know, if they clear practices, you know, that's when, you know, you've got 100 guys without masks on, you know, face to face combat, fluids everywhere. Mm-hmm.
Actually using footballs.
What's that?
Actually using footballs that they're sharing, right?
Yep, correct. Yep. So I guess what Barta said, I agree with. It's, we're still a long ways off, but we can learn a lot in this next month.
Yeah. Right.
What would you, you know, just hypothetically speaking, I mean, Barta can't speak to this necessarily, but how would you go about seating 30,000 people, let's say, in Kinnick Stadium? What would be the smartest way to do that?
Yeah, I really think that you would have to, like, limit the number of people that come in together. Like, say there's a family of four. I don't know what if you say four or six or eight, whatever you want to consider, like, the biggest unit you'll allow. Almost like seating at a restaurant, you know, where you have, you know, table for four, table for six. And then I would put at least a row between them then and say, okay, here's your family of six, and then, you know, two rows below you will be another family of four to eight or whatever that it is. That's why I'm not even sure 50% capacity is possible if you do that, but I do think you have to. I just think this thing is transmitted, from what I've been told, very easily if somebody actually is positive. And, you just don't want to, you know, what a terrible that situation that would be. Like, to go to a football game with your family or whatever and find out that suddenly you've got exposed to this. I mean, I don't think anybody wants that, certainly. So that's why I think when Gene Smith said 20% capacity, that to me seems more realistic. I really think it'll be a big win this season to get football played at all. I think.
Yeah.
And you know, if there's only 20% capacity there, it's still, the game will be televised. The athletes get to compete. Fans get to watch, you know, at home. TV networks get their, you know, product put on the field. I mean, or on their stations. I just think that's really the goal ultimately. I think fans is a bonus. Are a bonus. And I just think you have to be really, really careful. So, to me, then you have to try maybe something different with the fans that are like in those suites, because indoors, obviously, as we know, it's easier. That's one advantage football has, is that it's an outdoor sport. So that's where I think it becomes a little trickier, is, you know, because those people will be like breathing the same air, basically. You know, you have to really maybe keep them separately, or maybe close some down some of those suites, make them sit outside. I wonder about, too, selfishly, like what they'll do with the media. Will we have to, you know, be outside or somehow spaced apart? Because that's why I, you know, here's a, I'm getting a little off topic, but in Minneapolis now, the restaurants are allowing patio seating only. Or Minnesota, I believe.
Okay. I talk about interesting.
Yeah, so and that, because it's less likely to spread outside, and it's harder to contract that, which makes sense, right? And then if you're like sitting inside with somebody, or, you know, strangers two tables away, or whether that actually has it and doesn't realize he has it, and suddenly, you know, that person sneezes or whatever, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, outside it's a little bit, you're safer. And so I think that's the thing to me. Like, football has that opportunity. You know, basketball will be a different conversation. That'll be interesting. But football, for, you know, as long as the weather's okay, why not sit outside on a nice fall afternoon and, you know, watch a game, socially distance, and being a little safer about it. So that's why I would say give them plenty of space. You know, no, I don't think anybody's eager to be on top of each other anyway, if you're a stranger in this situation. I mean, the question then becomes how much space and what's the maximum amount of, you know, people allowed to sit together? You know, what would be considered one family unit or whatever?
Yeah. Well, we can definitely do an entire podcast on media protocols that we think would be advisable or whatever sometime, because that really is that's actually a serious question I've thought about, while mowing the lawn and stuff like that, just thinking about it, like, you know, just the responsibility of media, not to put ourselves on too much of a pedestal, but I don't think that we want a situation where only the University of Iowa and only, you know, Nebraska University and Ohio State University is supplying content from within the stadium to fans. Now, we may end up getting to that point. But, I mean, one of the great values of what we do, in my opinion, is, you know, being at the games and you know, watching, sizing up warm-ups, which we wouldn't be able to do on TV, obviously. And certainly one-on-one conversations, I have a feeling might be, gone by the wayside for this year, unless it's on the phone, but we'll see.
Right.
So it's going to be an interesting media environment, and I don't know if a lot of people out there care about that, but it's definitely something that I feel like is going to be really important.
Yeah.
In order to share that, you know, the real stories and experiences with our readers and our fans.
Yeah. Like, what are they doing at Knoxville? Are you allowed to interview the drivers or?
So yeah, that's a good question. What I've been told thus far and final plans have not been sent out, but, that I can, walk to Victory Lane, but stay, 6 feet away from the driver. And then if I can't, you know, carry on a conversation, if it's too loud, which could be possible, then I can just do a phone call later. So, so it's going to be interesting, you know, and I don't know if you said I'm required to wear a mask, but I will be wearing a mask. So it's going to be
right.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. So, it's going to be interesting. I mean, NASCAR isn't allowing fans yet, but Knoxville, Iowa will be next Saturday. So, but the other thing I wonder about too that I think will eventually need to be addressed is, and I don't know, what do you think about this actually? So Barta talked a lot about risk today, you know, mitigating risk, making a choice, a personal choice about risk. So if you're let's say you're a family of four, like I am. You know, like I have, you have two kids, a wife and yourself. And you, I don't know, is it upon you to make that, you make the choice to be as safe as you can at Kinnick Stadium, but you go there knowing you could be, you know, crowded by somebody who is, you know, in a inpatient concession line or bathroom line. And I don't know, yeah. Is that on me or is that on them? Or how do you kind of size that all up?
Yeah, that's kind of what he's saying. I think when he's going to explain, I think they're going to try to explain as well as they can what you're going to face once you get in there. Like, here's how we're going to, you know, manage all that stuff. Those are legitimate questions. Yeah, like if I bring my family in there, do we have to all, you know, wait in line to go to the bathroom together? Do we have to, you know, go to the bathroom together? I mean, yeah, those are all great questions. They need to have those answers beforehand. Like, here's how we're going to do that. So people can,
right.
Like, because I can actually see the first game, you know, I'm just kind of spitballing here, but people maybe showing up and then kind of get a feel for what the thing is, you know, how the setup is, and then maybe some people will feel uncomfortable and just leave, you know, just flat out say, you know what, I don't want to be here, I'm not safe, I didn't realize it was going to be like this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
That could happen, and those people, I believe, should also get a refund if they decide, you know, before kickoff, for example, like, this is just not what I signed up for. There's more people here than I thought there would be, there's less space than I thought there would be between us, whatever. Fewer people are wearing masks than I thought would be wearing masks.
Yeah.
So, I just want to leave and get my money back. But that's why I think the university really needs to be as forthright as they can about, here's exactly what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to police things. For example, here's how we're going to try to, you know, make sure you're as safe as possible. And then once they make that promise, they got to live up to it, I think, or give you your money back.
Yeah, no, that's well said. And it does sound like they're kind of going down that path. But yeah, if I was a fan, a concerned fan, now some fans might not want any interaction, but I would want university staff or security or something, police. I would want them to police lines for the safety of families. I mean, if someone is being, or not just families, just anybody, elderly, whatever. I mean, there's a lot. Let's face it. There's a lot of elderly Iowa fans that come to those games right below where we sit in the press box. So, you know, there's a lot of people. I mean, I think that they would want to feel secure in that situation. I'm sure Iowa wants to have their ticket money too. So I would guess that if it comes to fans, that there will be quite a bit of policing inside the stadium And I think there should be.
Honestly, Chad, we're overdue for that. I mean, I've been a sporting event lately where I think this has kind of gotten out of hand anyway. You know, people just like getting, you know, having too much to drink and getting rowdy and shouting and swearing. And I just think that there probably hasn't been enough security involved anyway. You know, we've seen fights in stands before, right, at sporting events. So maybe this is going to be a little bit of a walking back of that anyway. You know, and maybe that's one good thing that come out of this is that we're going to have better fan behavior and better in-stadium experiences for people that don't want to just, you know, be around that kind of atmosphere. I just want to be able to bring their family there and have fun. Maybe this will be a chance to kind of scale back some of the poor behavior that we've seen. And people that, you know, that really will miss that, you know, too bad. Sorry.
Right.
You know, I just think that that could be one. I mean, I'm probably being overly optimistic, but I just think that could be one good thing that come out of this is that we're going to have more, I don't know about security, but just more, you know, more of a protocol in place, more of a feeling that you're in a, you know, good atmosphere.
Yeah. You know,
somebody that is there looking out for your back in case something goes wrong, because I think that they're going to have to bend over backwards really to make sure that nothing happens. Can you imagine how terrible it would be for, like, it doesn't matter where, if it just happens at one stadium or something, there's an outbreak, you know, in that community after a sporting event, and it's linked to the sporting event, and maybe say 100 people like get this disease
because, right,
you know, nobody, that's just gonna be a black eye on anybody that happens to.
Yeah, that's why I'm not convinced that NFL will even have fans. The legal ramifications of all that, but colleges need that, so I think they're gonna push for that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big difference. Yeah, NFL can get by on its TV revenue and its fantasy football and its gambling or whatever, and people have been kind of gravitating toward watching games on TV anyway. This has been a natural thing that's happening in our society. So I think they'll be fine. But college, you're right, college football without, I guess we haven't addressed this, but, you know, the band, to me, the band is a big part of this. I don't know where they're going to fit into this.
Great question. Because, you know, that's a lot of saliva going into instruments.
And we know that, that's how things can spread. But they are, you know, college football to me is a lot more about that atmosphere than NFL is. You know, the cheerleaders and the mascots.
Yeah, true.
And so I'll be curious to see if that stuff is still allowed. I mean, I hope so, but it's also, I can see why they might not.
Yeah. And one last thought I had, and we can close up here, but the tailgating question that Barta got, I do think, I mean, there's a lot of university lots. And I'm sure it'll be pretty controlled. I don't think every space will be sold out. And they can control those because they're their lots. But what about, you know, across the street on Melrose Avenue at a house? Yeah. I mean, are we going to see, you know, 150 students, you know, crammed together, drinking out of a beer, you know, bong or whatever, and or beer tube,
yes, we will, probably.
You know, right across the street from very controlled environment. It'll be an interesting scene, to say the least, if we get to that point.
Yeah, I agree. But that's going to be a lot more difficult to manage, I think, for a university than inside the stadium or inside their own lots. You're right. So
I don't think they can manage it. I mean, I don't think that's even in their purview to manage, right, unless there's a state law.
Well, I think, that kind of behavior will happen. We've kind of seen it on social media anyway, when people are going to the beaches still or whatever. I think that stuff will still happen.
Yeah, true. All right, let's finish. I wanted to finish on a lighter note because we did not get to this on a radio show the other night. Thanks for doing this, by the way. I know you're a full-time coronavirus guy right now, but it's fun to get you back in sports here for an afternoon. So no Big Ten media days. By the way, one last thing. I just want your opinion on it before I transition. My wife and I were on the deck the other night, and I was talking. I was like, you know what? I don't think there's going to be bowl games this year. Yeah. So I might be home for Christmas. I just can't, especially with what we're hearing about campuses closing between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right.
I kind of think bowl games might be out this year.
I hadn't thought about that. That is interesting. Yeah. Besides the playoff.
Playoff. Maybe they expand the playoff or something, but or, you know, maybe just do the major bowl games or something. I don't know. I just can't imagine there's going to be a big push for, you know, let's say the let's say the Holly Bowl. I don't even know if it's, I mean, it's not Big Ten tie anymore, but let's just say that.
Right, for, yeah.
I mean, what, you know, there's not going to be a huge appetite, I don't think, for fans to fly across the country in virus season, you know, to go to a middle of the road bowl game.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. So why have it?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm on your side on that. I do think it's a question. I mean, you're right, especially with what's going on. They're expecting a second wave, and then I just think the cities are actually hosting those fans. So you got fan bases coming from two different cities potentially, and who knows if there's an outbreak in those cities they're coming from, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
I agree. They should just, we've already seen, like, today the Boston Marathon got canceled for the first time, and I don't know how long. I mean, the big sports events are getting canceled, so why would you have small ones if you don't
Right. Yeah. So anyway, I kind of think I'm gravitating towards the feeling that there's going to be college football. Obviously, we have to see how every day goes. But, you know, limit your expectations. This still could be a shortened season. We could see 40,000 fans in Kinnick for Iowa, Northern Iowa, then realize, you know, it was too much, and then things get scaled back to no fans or something like that. So a lot on the table there. All right. So the last topic, who would you take to Big Ten Media Days? Uh-huh. If you were, I know your answer is kickers, punters, long snappers. But I mean, realistically.
Yeah. All right.
If you're Kirk Ferentz, let's do two things. If you're trying to bring the best media stories versus if you're Kirk Ferentz, so who would you bring, Mark Emmert, to Big Ten Media Days? Three athletes.
I have to let me get my roster back out here actually, because I don't want to miss anybody. Obviously we know they lean towards seniors. The Zoom call you had the other day with athletes, you had two of my three choices on there. Actually, I think you definitely want
to.
That don't you?
Chauncey Golston, Austin Schulte, and Amir Smith-Marset were the three guys on the call.
Yeah, and I think Golston and Smith-Marset are two great interviews. First of all, they're also going to be big parts of the team, starters, seniors. Austin Schulte hasn't played as much. I think I interviewed him once, so obviously you wouldn't bring him. He's a backup defensive tackle. No offense to him. But who else would we want? Let me think here now. Brandon Smith would probably be deserving. He's okay. Not great with the media, but Alaric Jackson, there's a guy that's probably going to be your highest draft pick, maybe your highest drafted player off his roster. But we've talked about this before. He's, very nice young man, but he does have a little bit of a stutter, and I don't think he's real comfortable around the media, so maybe that would be too much to ask of him to sit there at a table with, reporter after reporter coming by. Maybe let's find like a rising star. Who do you? I wish I'd given this more thought. Davion Nixon would be really good.
But I don't think. I mean, he would not rise to the Kirk Ferentz approved level.
No, I agree with you. He's not. He hasn't been like a team leader. He's just his second year as a player.
I mean. An out-of-the-box pick would be Spencer Petras. He seems to have a lot of respect in the room.
Yeah.
But he would be the first sophomore parents would ever bring to Chicago, and he's never really played in a game of any meanings.
Yeah.
He would not pick him, although that would be of interest to us.
We all want to talk about starting quarterback, exactly,
If you want to get – I'll get my three out of the way. And then you can kind of pick around that. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah.
My three. Now I would love to have Marset, but I don't. I kind of think Ferentz would go the other direction and choose Brandon Smith, just because I know he's one of the team captains or team leaders right now. And he does have a good story. I mean, coming from SEC country, very well spoken young man. He represents the program well. So does Marset, in my opinion. But. I just think Ferentz would go Brandon Smith. Chauncey Golston, I think, is a no-brainer. Probably the top defensive player on the team coming back. And then I would go Keith Duncan. you know, a Lou Groza finalist, another great interview. That would be my third pick.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's obviously we both know, you know, how much we like talking to Keith Duncan. He is great with the media, and obviously he's also a returning All-American, so, as you said. So
yeah.
Matt Hankins would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fourth-year starter. I mean, and technically this is the fourth year he'll start games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another guy that we haven't talked to a lot, but he would be a good choice, certainly. So now we're saying, who do you think Ference would send? Was that your list, or who would you like to see?
Okay, yeah, that was my list, kind of. I mean, other than, like, maybe Tyler Goodson or something, you know, but that would never happen. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we haven't even talked to him yet, so.
Right, no.
But your realistic three are, you think Golston, Marcet, and who?
Well, I'm not even sure. You kind of talked me out of Marcet now, but let's just say that he kind of gives the okay there.
Okay.
Some media training. make sure they know kind of what he's going to say. I think, you know what, he probably would send Duncan. Don't you think?
I mean, consensus All-American. He's got a great story.
Does, and he's very good at the media. He wouldn't say anything that you wouldn't want him to say. the Nebraska media would be all over him there.
very on-brand kicking.
Yeah.
They have one from every side, each phase, so that's very Ferency.
Simon Colbert is a guy that started it out for 2 years. They'd like him a lot. He's a pretty steady. He would handle himself very well there. I think we both know that.
I think so.
I think Duncan, you probably had it right. Duncan Smith and Golston.
Yeah. But I could see him bring in, I could see Ference going like a Mekhi Sargent route. There's another good story. You know, kind of like we got Torin Young last year, kind of the backup running back. Someone like that. But really the secondary only has, you know, Hankins is kind of its veteran and linebackers are sort of unproven. Yeah. Maybe Jaimin Colbert. I mean, he could be an outside shot there. He seems like he shows up every Tuesday with media.
Okay.
Veteran presence on the defense. Wasn't saying anything silly.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
I think we can both agree this is one decision that Kirk Ferentz is very, very happy to not have to make.
Exactly. So
he will not miss media days.
No. And I think I get to talk to him for the radio show here in a couple weeks, so I will ask him about how happy he is about that.
Miss media days? I bet P.J. Fleck is very upset. I think he prepares about a 30-minute speech every year for this.
Yes.
And delivers it in 12 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Oh man, I miss your humor, man. Hopefully we'll have some post-game podcasts to record this fall and everything like that. And hopefully we'll get to keep everyone gearing up for the season these next couple months. But any last words from you, Mark, as we close out?
No, I think that was very good. That was good to catch up with you again. That was good stuff. I'm glad you thought of this.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks a lot, everyone, for tuning in. We are so thankful for that you listened in. And we will hopefully do this a little more often and catch you next time. See you.